Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the June 19th meeting of the Portland City Council. Whenever you're talking about parks, you're dealing with a boisterous crowd, so I'm not surprised, but good morning and welcome. Could you please call the roll?
Fish? Saltzman?
Here.
Novick?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Hales?
Here. Okay, communications items first, please, 576.
Request of Wade Varner to address council regarding homeless ideas.
Morning, Wade.
On a personal note, Jason's under the knife right now.
Hope he does okay.
He blew out his disc like I did.
Uh-oh.
And I want to go up there. Good morning. Thank you for allowing me to talk to you this morning. My name is Wade Varner. I'm the president of Homeless Against Homelessness in America. As you know, we've been coming to you for over 2 years now talking about the homeless issue we have. We have also stated that we have come up with a proposal on how to help at no cost to the city. Right to Dream 2 helps 70 people each day, and every day it costs about $1 a day because porta potties are expensive. They have helped about 25,000 plus people last year. So we've taken that, Right to Dream has taken that many people off the streets, and how much would that cost the city to do that? How much are you guys paying these other social service agencies to do that? That's the biggest thing in them. We have the money put away and ready to put our proposal into motion. All we need is a place easily accessible to services downtown. We have been talking with other organizations, advocates, and homeless community that will work with the homeless to help themselves, giving the hand up. We all know the things for women have gotten especially bad here lately. I mean, last week was a disaster of unprecedented, that was crazy. And the housing report, according to the housing report, $387,000 will be taken away from the housing budget this next year. Homeless families have risen 18% in 2 years. Homeless women have risen 22% in two years. The percentages come from 2013 point in time count data. Incarceration serves as a tool to drive people from the Portland area because of police exposure, lack of treatment on demand, and the cost of jailing one homeless person in Multnomah County for a year is $4,856. And that comes to about $404 a month. If we use that money could be effectively used in programs to help people get through these difficulties or get housing. But as long as we see the police and private security used to harass the homeless so much they leave town rather than be constantly harassed. Both these numbers are unacceptable. We are closing things for our children and homeless, yet the horses in the pool get to stay. We have a long history of Portland of trying to give the homeless a hand up, not a handout. I would like to continue by proposing to the same city ordinance as Seattle has that allows nonprofits to help the homeless. If we could get that passed in Portland, and NIMBYs would allow a few people in each neighborhood, churches and nonprofits could adequately house people in each neighborhood. Once again, we need to get this proposal off the ground. It's 2 years ago. We've been at it for 2 years. We need to see things change in the community to help the community give a hand up, not a handout. All we're asking for is the ability to put a place, because we have the NIMBYs. We can't release a commercial space without doing it. The Presbyterians tried over in Selwood and they NIMBYed them. I mean, are we going to recriminalize homelessness where we're jailing people and spending that money that we should be spending on housing and the homeless?
Thank you, Wade.
Before you leave, can I just correct one thing? In fairness to the mayor and the council. The Housing Bureau this past budget cycle got 100% of their budget ask. The cut that I think you're alluding to is something called sequestration.
I know.
And sequestration is something that Congress did.
I know.
And they picked the most unattractive cuts they could find on the theory that they would never allow it to go forward. Well, it went forward. And it has been a hammer on homeless people. But this council did fund 100% of the Housing Bureau's requests.
Yes, 100% from last year, but homelessness is up 20%. That's the big thing.
Understand.
When you have people like me and Right to Dream 2 and all the rest of the religious and nonprofits, if you just allow us to do by putting in the same law that Seattle has, So we can take, we can put it, each place can take a few people, so you don't have big clumps of homeless, and you don't have the security problems and everything else. If we spent the money that we spend on security against the homeless, private security against the homeless, for the homeless, we wouldn't have a big homeless population. We'd be down to the punks, the junks, and the drunks. Okay?
Thank you.
I mean, all we're asking for is have enough faith in the homeless, the houseless community, or the formerly houseless community, have enough faith in us to be able to do it. 2 years, R2-D2's been down there. Okay? I mean, that's a lot of people. 25,000 people served for nothing, no cost to the city. We can do twice that next year if you allow us. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you. Good morning. Next one, please, Carla.
Item 577, request of Jason Kirsten to address council regarding homeless ideas.
Jason's getting worked on. We wish him well. Okay, thank you. Number 578.
Request of Michael Krupp to address council regarding an appointment with the mayor and honesty in government.
Mr. Krupp, here? Not here. Good morning.
Mitakuyasan, although understandably unable to meet me last month, while the wolves met in the dark back rooms to divvy up the spring budgetary lamb, our children's future put into the deep freezer of unshared wealth. I'm no less gleeful meeting the Mayhor in June. This body you preside over is a rotting corpse, a momentary microcosm of all that ills our world. You and the perennial cronies, the little local lords of liquidation, devise better ways to desanguinate our home, the city of peace. I have been to Israel. It isn't. We are. You facilitate the recolonization of our house by privateers and pirates. And in your fervor to seize the biggest, bloodiest pieces of the pie, a feeding frenzy ensues. And of course, your banquets are held behind closed doors. You shame the names of alumni like U.S. Senator Ron Wyden, Democrat from Oregon. The only significant thing about you is your insignificance. Like any infectious virus, you exist only en masse, using my people and our mother's world itself to reproduce. Each of your children's capable of only one task, to master the deprivation of the good through your greed. You sit here today due to astute and timely self-deportation of Sam and Randy. You merely fill a vacuum. You are a vacuum stance of coincidence. Through the vacant windows of your eyes, I address Father Filth, little Papi Diablo Sr., all toasty warm under his five-star pentagram, slamming single malt with Robo-Cheney, Kissinger, Brzezinski, and Fellwall, admirals and generals, Dun and Bradstreet, Lockheed and Martians, filthy whores of war, howler monkeys of hell. You, sir, are a municipal alveolus of the devil's black lung Washington disease, the STD, or suck-till-dead machine of war, the very one excoriated by the immortal Dr. King, the Hoover of all that sucks, the paper-trained lapdog, the Oregufnian, loosely chained in your marble lobby, the specter of the spirit of KGW in the square, having rotted 6 feet under.
Okay,
our
thanks.
Own living room now looking like Kuwait after Saddam.
Thanks very much. Time's up. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. Next.
Good morning.
Item 579, request of Marcy Houle to address council regarding Forest Park.
Morning.
First of all, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today about a place I'm particularly concerned about, Portland's Forest Park. And I'm here to tell you briefly why this place is indeed very special and so deserving of our attention and continued care. The hard part is trying to condense my 30 years of experience studying and writing about this place into just 3 minutes. But the primary point I'd like to get across is this. I would love to see a renewed commitment and excitement over this special place that was first conceived by the Olmsted brothers in 1903 and later by others to be an urban wilderness, unlike any other city park in the nation. The three founders of Forest Park were clear in their thinking. In the 1920s, Fred Cleator wrote that Portland needed a wilderness park for wilderness values. I think he knew what he was talking about. After all, Cleator was the man that gave us the Pacific Crest Trail and the first wilderness areas in the Northwest. Then there was Thornton Munger, another pioneering scientist. For decades, he advocated for, quote, a wilderness within our city where the feeling of an uninterrupted forest sanctuary may be preserved. Together with the third founder, Ding Cannon, hundreds of citizens strove against significant odds to give us the Forest Park we're so fortunate to have today. And since the park's creation in 1948, it has been very carefully stewarded to make sure its unique values have remained intact. And this culminated when the City of Portland supported the writing of an amazing and comprehensive plan, the document, the Forest Park Natural Resources Management Plan, to protect this place in perpetuity. In 1995, this plan, written by scientists, became land use law. The goal statement of this plan, I think, should be posted at every Forest Park trailhead, for it capsulizes what this park really means to Portland. It reads, Forest Park is an unparalleled resource where citizens can enjoy the peace, solitude, beauty, and unspoiled naturalness of an urban wilderness, a place that maintains this wilderness quality while allowing passive recreational and educational use without degrading natural resources. It is America's premier urban forest. You see, Forest Park was created to be unique. Even though it's large, it was not conceived to be an amusement park with all kinds of recreation. Rather, it was designed to provide an entirely different kind of park experience, one of low-impact, passive use, with conservation of native resources as its highest priority. It was created to be a place where Portlanders can go to find beauty and tranquility, quiet, and spiritual refreshment. But if it is to remain that way, it's important we recognize its unique properties that each day become more rare. So I've come up with a quick way to help us remember the ABCs of Forest Park. A, altogether. Scientists have determined that Forest Park has more interior habitat or native ecosystem that's intact or altogether than any other city park in the world. B, birds. Forest Park has a greater diversity of birds and native mammals than any other city park in the United States. C, corridor. Forest Park's the only city park in the nation that has a connecting wildlife corridor. So I am continually grateful that the past leaders of Portland have had the determination to maintain these extraordinary values for 70 years. Now it is up to us and to you to renew our commitment to protecting this remarkable, one-of-a-kind urban wilderness. And I know future generations of Portlanders will thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Okay. Item 580, request of Catherine Thompson to address council regarding restore health and safety of Forest Park.
Good morning.
Hello. I actually gave you some written material earlier, and I did make a mistake on one of the ordinances, so I've got a revision of that. If you don't mind, I'd like to give that to you and also show you some pictures of the pictures of the signs that are in the park. Because my name's Catherine Thompson. I'm a physician. I'm a pediatrician. I work at the Children's Clinic. I'm a member of the Portland Academy of Pediatrics, and as you probably know, many groups have been writing letters, individuals and groups, concerned about safety. It kind of started with the single track committee where people were anticipating safety issues if single track occurred. And really what I've discovered as I've spent time in the park is that's happening right now, and I really think it's a crisis. And that's why I'm here today. Basically, there's several problems, and the reason I'm coming to you is I think there's policy issues and there are ordinance issues that really need to be addressed. So in the policy aspect, there's very good guidelines in the Northwest, in the management plan, about cyclists. They need to be on very specific trails, not all of them. They have to be 8 feet wide. There has to be good line of sight, and they can't dump onto a pedestrian trail. There's also a comment that that people in the park need to be safe and feel safe, and that's just not happening now. And another visionary thing that came from the management plan was as user pressures came along, which they anticipated, that things that were very active kinds of activities like single track should be diverted to other parks in the city to really to preserve the beauty and the sanctuary of the park. So, you know, I showed there's some pictures there of the signage in the park. So right now the main sign that's in the park is one that refers to Ordinance 1626-250, and that ordinance expired in 1992. And if you Google it, you'll see two entries on the web by cyclists that basically say, this is no longer in effect. So that's really a problem. And even I wrote about Maple Trail. I was very pleased to go out and see that a lot of restoration had been done, and I felt hurt about that. But the sign they put up is the same sign that is no longer in effect. I researched which ordinance is now applied to vehicles in the park. Bikes are subsumed under the vehicles there. But those aren't posted anywhere. So when you go to enforcement without accurate signage, you know, the law says the ranger can put up signs, and until there's signs up, he can't do any enforcement. Once the signs are up, then he could give a warning, and if there's a second violation, he can exclude somebody from the park. So when I talked to the ranger, Ranger McCoy, he said he hasn't excluded a single cyclist during the time that he's been his tenure there. So the enforcement isn't working. It's just not working. And Marcy and I have called some other cities where they have shared trails or exclusive trails. You need a much larger force to do that. So we're really asking you to make this safety issue important, because 92% of the users of the park are pedestrians, and right now they don't feel safe. So one of the things that we've done is started to circulate a petition casually that we're going to submit to you. It's in its preliminary state. We have about 250 people who've signed it, and it really gives some information about how people are feeling in the park, that they're not feeling safe, and that something really needs to be done to protect those pedestrians. So,
okay, thank you. We look forward to getting that from you, and thanks for this information. Appreciate you bringing this to our attention.
Dr. Thompson, if you could email me the revised version, I'd appreciate
it. Yes,
that.
I'd be happy to do that.
Thanks a lot. Okay, it's time to move to consent calendar. I don't believe we have any requests to remove items from the consent calendar. Is that right? There are none? Okay, then a roll call on consent, please.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye.
And now we're at time certain number 581.
Adopt budget adjustment recommendations and the supplemental budget for the fiscal year 2012-13 over expenditure process and make budget adjustments in various funds.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Our now somewhat rested budget staff is here.
A little bit more. I'm Andrew Scott. I'm the city budget director, and with me is Claudio Camposano, our city bump coordinator. The over expenditure ordinance is what we do at the end of every year. It is when bureaus have a chance to either with current looking at current or projected expenditures, if they're in excess of appropriations, move funds or make other technical adjustments in the budget. I'm going to go. There's not a whole lot in this year's over expenditure ordinance, so I will go relatively quickly through it. Exhibit 4 in the ordinance that was submitted. This is the general fund reconciliation report. And it should be in your packet. There are really just three items off that report I wanted to highlight. The first is a $10,000 request coming from the City Budget Office for fund and debt management. It appropriates $10,000 to pay for interest on business license refunds. This is a very technical change in the way that these interest payments are accounted for. When the city has to give refunds, we obviously pay interest on that. In the past, that interest has come out of the net revenue that we receive. It is now being accounted for as an actual interest expense and thus needs to be budgeted in that way. This $10,000 comes out of contingency. We'll be, again, to make sure we have money to cover that expense, and we'll be dealing with this in the future. But it is just a technical change in the way that's accounted for. The two other items on there have to do with Police Bureau. There's a little over $700,000 coming out of comp set aside for retirement bridge funding. Again, we talked about this during the budget process. We were going to provide bridge funding next year to the Police Bureau, but the retirement incentive program was successful, and they had a number of early retirements, and so instead we need to pay for those costs this year for the voluntary retirement program, but we save that money next year. It's really just moving it forward in the fiscal year. And then finally, there's $500,000 going to police to cover personal services funding request. Again, this is money that's coming out of Police Bureau's share of the compensation set aside. As they've been sort of looking at their overall budget for the entire year, they believe this is what they need in order to make sure they don't overspend. Again, this was in the spring bump. You may recall we gave them about $500,000 less in order to sort of push down, put some pressure on their overtime costs. Police has been working hard to reduce those, and they are reviewing and reconfiguring their overtime system. But we do anticipate they would need this to get through the end of the fiscal year. And then finally, outside of general fund discretionary, there are just a couple of general fund non-discretionary items to note. There's about $1.1 million in new revenue coming in the Revenue Bureau, which again is sort of, this is a technical change in terms of how we deal with cable fund based on an audit finding, and then some revenue coming in for procurement services and then also into Portland Parks and Recreation. And then finally, wanted to note, again, back on the Voluntary Retirement Incentive Program, $1.5 million total coming from bureaus into the health fund to fund those early retirements. About $770,000 of that is general fund. Again, that's also being accounted for in here. There are a number of non-general fund changes, but I won't go through those in any detail unless you have specific questions about them.
Questions? Now, the $500,000 comp set aside for the Police Bureau, it's not assured that that will all be spent, but it's to prevent an over expenditure, right?
That's exactly right. It's a very large bureau with a very large budget. It's a very small percentage, so we want to absolutely make sure that they have enough in there, but I know they're continuing to work hard to keep those costs down.
And in between, remind me this, between the Police Bureau and the rest of the bureaus in the retirement incentive program that you just mentioned, did we end up spending more or less than we originally estimated for the retirement incentives? I think it's more because we got more.
Yeah, we actually didn't have an estimate of we weren't exactly sure what the take-up would be. Bureaus did have to fund this out of their current year existing budgets, and so that's the $1.5 million is coming from existing budgets. Again, with the exception of Police Bureau, which was in a different situation because of next year's bridge funding, so we were able to move that forward and essentially save the money.
Yeah, it seemed like I recall it a $1.2 million item at one point in the Police Bureau when we were thinking about that as a FY13-14 budget item, but now it's $700,000 here. I think that's because they occurred earlier. But
yeah, I don't remember the exact 13-14 number, but I know this is moving those expenses forward and provided some savings in 13-14. That's right.
Bottom line, the most important thing is the retirement incentive program worked.
Yeah.
So it was effective. Not just in the Police Bureau, a number of places, more than I think a number of bureau managers thought it would be.
Yeah.
All right. Other questions for staff?
I have a question, Andrew. Could you remind us what are the final legal events, legally mandated events, between now and finalizing our budget?
Well, so this is the final sort of 12-13 event in this current year budget for the overexpenditure ordinance. Tomorrow afternoon, well, actually this afternoon, we will have, regarding the 13-14 budget, the Tax Supervising and Conservation Commission hearing, and then tomorrow at 2 o'clock is council adoption of the budget. There are a number of legal steps we go through having to do with state revenue sharing, the creation and closure of funds, and then the final adoption of budget. That'll all happen tomorrow.
Great. Any other questions? Staff, thank you very much. And do we have anyone signed up to testify on this item?
Yes, Joe Walsh.
Okay. Did you say no?
Yes, Joe Walsh.
And well, you are coming up. Okay, good. Come on up.
My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice. And I spoke on this before. As an organization, we are very much against the entire budget. We think you took the wrong direction. We think...
Joe, this is this year's budget.
Okay.
That we're talking about.
But you have the capacity not to go in the same direction all the time. And one of the things in that presentation that I heard that bothers me is that in your budgets, you have your departments. And in your departments, you have a safety net. So just like you were talking about before, the $500,000 for the police department is for a projected overtime. They have enough money to cover it So somebody made the decision to say $500,000 is enough. My contention is this. If you keep each department and they have a contingency fund, and then you turn around for the entire budget and say, we need millions of dollars for a contingency fund in case we run out of money or for a rainy day, what you're doing is you're multiplying it all over the place. And you just have money sitting there. Why, people are on the streets. That's not human. So stop it. Our organization begs you to say, you know what, we got $2 million set aside over here for a contingency fund for the budget. If the police have to go to all of these protests in the hundreds, then we're going to pay for it. I would suggest you cut it down to 50. That's our argument. Your budget is so weird, it makes no sense. And you keep doing the same things over and over, this year, next year, next year, until you start getting run out of office. That's what we should do. And you two are up for election, and I would be concerned, because people are really getting fed up, and they're getting to know what you're doing. You're doing your pet projects, and you're screwing human beings. That's what you're doing. Thank you.
Thanks. Morning.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Charles Johnson. That's always a tough act to follow. But I think it is important for us to remember that we are making the current budget that's ending, and however many departments end up with surpluses or unallocated contingency funds. The most important thing to remember is what Commissioner Fitz talked about eloquently a few weeks ago, that we are failing to serve some very needy communities, women and youth who are victims of human trafficking and sex trafficking. And I think one thing that Mr. Walsh mentioned that is a definite concern that I know the mayor even somewhat shares is there's confusion among the people in the budget. I'm not sure that there's a much clearer communication, at least when you get your IRS packet. There's a pretty little pie chart in the back. And that's something that I have not really seen in the budget communicating during the missions that I've come to know what's revenue, what's allocated for reserves, what's allocated for contingencies. So hopefully that's something that can be better communication with the people on the budget issue, because I know there are many of us who are at a loss for what is available in reserves, what's not really there, what's survived in contingency, and that lack of transparency is especially problematic for people who are in the most at-risk communities who see nothing except that the city does nothing for emergency overnight shelter and then finds the one place that does it. But I'm sure you'll be making a better decision about that during the next few weeks. Thank you, Commissioners.
Thank you. Thanks. Anyone else? Carl, anyone else signed up on this?
Not for 581.
Okay. Any further council discussion? And roll call on the emergency ordinance, please.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Number 582.
Authorize temporary operating loans between various funds to provide interim funding to cover lags in federal, state, and other grant reimbursements.
Morning again. Still Andrew Scott, City Budget Director. The ordinance before you authorizes temporary operating loans between a number of different funds and the grants fund. The purpose of these loans, the city established a grants fund when we implemented SAP as sort of a best financial practice. All grant expenditures and revenues are recorded in this fund. Because most grant revenues are reimbursable after the fact, the fund, through most of the year, sort of maintains a negative cash balance because, again, the city's fronting the money for most of these expenditures. We get reimbursed later. When that reimbursement happens during a fiscal year, it all nets out. When it crosses over a fiscal year, however, accounting principles and Oregon local budget law requires that funds at the end of the fiscal year cannot be negative. And thus, what we've done the last couple of years and are continuing to do this year is that the funds that have are essentially responsible for the expenditure, but the revenue hasn't been received yet, make a temporary loan to the grants fund. It's a loan on June 30th with the intent to pay back on July 1st. Again, sort of a one-day loan that occurs, again, to keep the fund out of the red. So this is a technical issue to make sure that the fund ends the fiscal year, again, without a negative cash or fund balance.
Okay. Questions? Thanks very much. Anyone signed up on this item?
Yes, Floyd Jones.
Morning.
Good morning. My name's Floyd Jones. I'm here representing Water Accountability Trust and Reform. And as you know, that's the ratepayer group, Anderson et al. Versus City of Portland, addressing misuse of ratepayer funds. And as you know, Mayor John DiLorenzo wrote to the city on the 17th, and so I'm going to read that letter into the record. It's addressed to City Attorney Terry Thatcher, and it states, "It has come to my attention that the agenda for City Council meeting Wednesday, June 19th, calls for discussion and action item on 582, authorizing operating loans from various city funds to other purposes pending receipt of federal grants. In particular, the resolution calls for, and then it addresses the two items, the sewer operating fund to the grants fund of $365,000, and the same for the water fund to the grants fund in the amount of $700,000. Both of these state that they're due by June 30th of 2014. Be it further resolved that the primary source of repayment of the loans collectively mentioned above is earned and deferred revenues for reimbursement of eligible grant expenses. We believe that use of water and sewer funds for these purposes violates the charter provisions at issue in our lawsuit for the following reasons. The charter does not authorize these funds to function as a lender. The terms of the loan are such that should the federal government refuse to move forward with the grants due to sequester or other budget reasons, there is no source of repayment. Both lending and the uses to which the loan funds will be put are outside the scope of permitted uses for these funds. We ask that City Council pull this resolution from the agenda or amend it in such a way to eliminate the provisions that require the sewer and water funds to loan the above referenced amount. Should Council adopt the resolution, we'll file a supplemental complaint to this particular to add this particular to the list of expenditures we believe are made illegally from these two funds. And thank you for your time concerning this matter. And this is from John DiLorenzo. We did receive a response from Terry Thatcher. And in one paragraph, he says, speaking to, you know, repayment of this, he said, if not, however, the water and sewer funds will still pay for the work because the work was all done to improve or repair water and sewer systems. So why is it that the money needs to be moved from the Water Bureau? Ratepayers are going to pay for this in any case.
Okay. Thank you.
Mayor, could we have
I have it here. I'm going to read it into the record.
Make that part of the record as well?
Sure. Yeah, no, I think I want to read this letter into the record since this has been brought up because it's important the public know that the city attorney responded to this concern, and it says, it's addressed to Mr. DiLorenzo, and it says, "Dear John, I'm in receipt of your letter. In it, you threatened to file additional claims in the above-referenced lawsuit should the City Council approve certain interfund loans from water and sewer funds to the city's grants fund. We cannot prevent you from moving to amend your complaint. I would urge you to reconsider, however. There is no legal basis to challenge the proposed interfund loans. A claim against the loans would be frivolous. To begin with, you misunderstood the purpose of the loans. This is actually laid out in the recitals to the ordinance to which you object. The loans simply pass money to the grants fund temporarily to cover the expense of water and sewer work that the city expects will eventually be paid for from grant proceeds. The city budgets all grant revenues and expenditures into a separate grants fund. Since grant reimbursements are typically received after work is completed, the city must, in essence, front the money for grants projects and get paid later. As a result, the grants fund often runs a negative cash balance during the year. Under law and generally accepted accounting principles, city funds cannot carry negative cash balances at the end of a fiscal year. Thus, the city arranges loans, such as those you question, from the responsible operating funds to the grants fund to cover the grants fund's negative balance on June 30th. According to state budget law, these operating loans must be repaid in the following year. Typically, the city makes loans for this purpose on June 30th and repays the operating funds the following day, July 1. The city reasonably anticipates that it will receive grants to pay for the water and sewer work involved here. If not, however, the water and sewer funds will still pay for the work because the work was all done to improve or repair the water and sewer systems. Second, in any case, you are wrong on the law. Under the Portland City Charter, the City Council may exercise any power or authority granted to the city by statute, general or special, or by this charter, and may do any other act necessary or appropriate to carry out such authority or exercise any other power implied by the specific power granted. State statute contains the provisions of the local budget law. Among other authorities granted to all municipalities by the state budget law is the following. It shall be lawful to loan money from any fund to any other fund of the municipal corporation whenever the loan is authorized by official resolution or ordinance of the governing body. In short, the city may make interfund loans from and to any of its funds pursuant to the provision of this law. So I think it's been resolved legally and wanted to make sure we got this into the record. Any further discussion? Any further testimony? And roll call on the resolution, please.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
But to me, the most pertinent sentence in the letter that the mayor just read was that the sewer and water funds would be paying for this anyway, even if we don't get the grants. So it is an appropriate loan and an appropriate use of funds. Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay, now our next time certain.
Item 583, accept report on 2013 summer free-for-all program.
Good morning, Mr. Bate.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Portland City Commissioner Amanda Fritz, the commissioner in charge of Parks and Recreation, newly appointed, and it's so fun to be introducing this presentation, although I do see a wry grin on the face of my colleague Commissioner Fish over there, and I just called him Commissioner Fritz. I know, I'm going to change it. I'm going to go back to my maiden name. It's just going to be simpler. And I need to recognize right up front that Commissioner Fish has done an enormous amount of work to prepare for this in his former capacity as Parks Commissioner. So I am honored and very pleased to introduce this report on the city's Summer Free for All program. As we know, the Summer Free-for-All is part of what makes Portland the special place that it is. Big thank you for the support of our generous sponsors and the grassroots committees from all over our great city. We are continuing more than a century-old tradition of our summer playgrounds and concert programs, and it's the seventh year of Movies in the Park. I have greatly enjoyed attending all of the events, or many of the events, over the past 4 years in my capacity as the Commissioner in charge of neighborhood involvement. I'm very much looking forward to attending even more this year and being in charge of parks. Thank you to Mayor Hales and all of my colleagues for continuing ongoing city funding for this important program. Because of this funding, 100,000 children in Portland will receive free lunches over the summer in the parks. These are children who would otherwise go without lunch. Thank you for making the lunch program possible. And I particularly, again, want to thank former Parks Commissioner Nick Fish for his leadership at this program. He brought together under one program a variety of free family-oriented parks activities, which we now call Summer Free for All. And he has worked for years to grow sponsors and support for the individual program activities. Commissioner Fish will now offer some remarks, and then we will turn this over to our Parks Director, Mike Abate.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Fish, for that very kind introduction. As Amanda knows, I've been having my pity party for one over the transition in my bureaus. But as I said to Linda and Arlene this morning, if Parks is going to migrate to someone else in this council, I can't think of someone better suited for this assignment and someone who is more likely to move this and other programs forward. In fact, Commissioner Fritz told me the other day that she intends to go to each and every one of the programs listed, and we'll hold her to that. I'm going to.
Will.
I'm going to.
I wouldn't bet against
her. I'm going to reserve, if I can, the bulk of my comments for the after the presentation. But I would like to simply tee this up by saying that in the 4.5 years, Mayor, that I had the honor of leading the Parks Bureau, there were few things that gave me greater pride than this program. And to me, this is the essence of what the Bureau does right. It's about public-private partnerships. And prior to 2010, we had a hodgepodge of summer programs, but there was no unifying theme. And so the Bureau brought them together under the banner of Summer Free-for-All. And what I think the public perhaps doesn't fully appreciate or know is that this is one of the most significant leverage opportunities that we have at the city. For every dollar that the city invests in this, the private parties and public-spirited businesses generate another $5, a total budget of about $1.4 million every year. And not surprisingly, I believe it's the most popular program that the city of Portland administers. Commissioner Fritz has already taken this program to the next level. It did not take her long. I believe this is the first all Spanish program, or at least the online version now is in multiple languages. And so she's bringing her value of access and inclusion to this work to make sure that there's no barriers to participation. When the program's over, if I could, Amanda, I want to just do a shout-out to a number of the people who've worked tirelessly and unsung to do this. And then I also want to highlight a couple of events that I hope our colleagues will join us at this summer. So thank you for your very kind words.
Director Abate.
Thank you, Commissioners and Mr. Mayor. I'll tell you a little bit today about the goals and programming of Summer Free-for-All, a bit about the access and equity work associated with the program, and tell you a little bit about our incredible sponsors and volunteers that make this happen. And you'll hear from a few of these partners after my remarks. The goals of a Summer Free-for-All include, as I mentioned, equity, access, community building, and all within an umbrella of entertainment. When the economic crisis hit a few years ago, Portland Parks and Rec, with the help of our partners, raised funds and expanded those summer programs to provide positive family entertainment. At the lowest point of the economy, it became even more important to provide healthy and active recreation opportunities for our community. So together with the Council's assistance, Summer Free-for-All has been there when families have needed it most. It's really the residents of Portland who curate and make these events happen. The public involvement process has resulted. We've got 47 different organizing committees around the city that raise hundreds of thousands of dollars each year. They help choose which bands and which movies to show at various parks. And then hundreds of volunteers act to actually pull off these events. David Douglas, Centennial, and Portland Public Schools are also active partners in Free for All. And as the commissioner mentioned, thanks to the council for, especially on the summer lunch program, extending it in the next year's budget. We appreciate that very much. Summer Free for All's focus on equity has allowed us to challenge many past assumptions. We're using what we've learned to adapt our organization to a changing city. So a couple of highlights. One I call sort of bringing parks to the people. As you know, one out of every five households in Portland does not have access to a nearby park. So if we just had our programs in existing parks, a large portion of our citizens wouldn't be served. So hence the expansion of our mobile playground program, where we actually take facilities and programming out to sometimes parks, sometimes apartment complexes throughout the city. In addition, it's a citywide celebration. And in our city, you'll find many, many languages that are spoken other than English. Commissioner Fish brought attention to the program guide that's in Spanish. But we have Spanish movies. We have Russian language movies. We have a huge variety of types and styles of music that are represented. And thanks to a partnership with East Portland Action Plan and Multnomah County, we're not only able to expand our programming in East Portland, but we also have those promotional materials in seven languages. And finally, we're employers, Portland Parks and Recreation. Summer Free-for-All requires a huge number of staff. And so we've changed our hiring practices so that our summer free-for-all staff reflect the communities that we serve. We've removed barriers of communication. We've adapted our employment application processes so that we could hire folks from the communities that we're going to be providing these services. And so it's done a great thing. Our employees know the neighborhoods that they're serving, and folks in the neighborhood understand that they have a friend in the city. So our access and equity work is ongoing, and we're in sort of a constant improvement process, and we'll look at the results this year and probably make some more changes as we move forward. All of our playgrounds, movies, and concerts are free to the public, but as the commissioners mentioned, it does take money to make that happen. It's only possible because of those generous contributions of our sponsors and our volunteers. As Commissioner Fish mentioned, $5 of private money for every single dollar of city money. And frankly, it's those 47 sort of grassroots committees around the city that do the bulk of the heavy lifting. I mentioned about the volunteers. Again, we couldn't pull this off. It's not just a money issue. It's a program, and those take staff and people at the events and setup and all of that. So thank you very much to the volunteers. And Commissioner Fish is going to thank some of the key folks that have been involved from Portland Parks and Recreation staff. But we appreciate his leadership in sort of setting the goal and the vision for that program. So generation after generation, Portlanders have continued this summer tradition, and the work that we do every year is a long-term investment in community livability. Summer Free for All begins June 27th at Peninsula Park, where we'll be celebrating the centennial of Peninsula Park, a great event. I mean, we have events from 11 a.m. to 11 p.m., and so nobody can miss an opportunity to go to Peninsula Park and celebrate 100 years. As a matter of fact, we just had an event a couple weeks ago to celebrate the great donation and volunteer work in restoring the Rose Garden there. So we hope you'll get outdoors with your family and your friends and make some memories with us this summer. And I'll turn it back to Commissioner Fritz to introduce our invited guests, our partners, and our volunteers.
Thank you for that presentation. We're now going to hear from a number of our sponsors and longtime supporters of Summer Free for All, also longtime supporters of parks. We have two panels of invited speakers. The first, please come on up. Claudia Knotek of New Seasons Market. Rodrigo Lopez, Comcast Regional Vice President for Oregon and Southwest Washington, and Arlene Kimura, longtime neighborhood leader in Hazelwood and East Portland. We're all coming down. Good morning. Thank you for being here.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Mayor, Commissioners, my name is Claudia Knotek, and I manage the community relations, charitable giving, and partnerships for New Seasons Market. It's a pleasure to be here today. New Seasons Market has been a long-term partner with the Summer Free for All program in our parks. We believe that all of our neighbors should have access to fun, safe summer events like concerts in the park. Our parks are our gathering places. They are places where our children go to play, where they get to experience nature, enjoy sports, picnic, and really develop true community. These are the places where you interact with someone you never even knew was your neighbor. You sit down at a concert in the park, and all of a sudden there's a conversation going on, and you realize this person lived two houses down and you didn't even know them. Employees and staff here at New Seasons Market have helped us along the way choose the parks that we're going to be partnering with. Most of our partnerships have been with regards to the concerts in the park, and we've made a concerted effort to ensure that the parks that are most in need are the ones that received our funds. There are certain parks that have lots of businesses that really can do it without the help, but there are also parks that rely on the businesses here in the community to help them make sure that the concerts actually happen there. We found that the relationship that New Seasons Market has developed with Portland Parks and Recreation is a real partnership. It not only goes one way, but it goes both ways. Our customers love seeing us, our logo up there. They love seeing that we give to the things that are important to them. And Portland Parks and Rec is truly one of those things that's important to them. We also get the opportunity for our community coordinators to go out into the parks and hand out whatever is the freshest or most delicious from the produce and get a chance to actually have interactions with the neighbors. We really think that our mission aligns so well with Portland Parks and Rec. Health, access to nature and what's natural, families, friends, and fun, and gathering with your neighbors to enjoy a movie or a concert. We look forward. I loved hearing that Amanda's going to be there, but we look forward to seeing all of you participate in one of the Summer Free-for-All programs, and watch for us. We'll be out there. I think they're starting off by passing out cherries in just a couple of weeks. So.
It's an incentive.
Now, thank you for this opportunity, and thank you for your leadership.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Rodrigo Lopez. I'm the Regional Vice President for Comcast here in Portland. New to the area, moved out in the fall, survived a winter here in the Northwest, and I'm quite excited about learning about these new or these ongoing programs that are going to support the community in the summer. Part of the culture of our company has been to support the communities where we live, we work, and we play. In this instance, this is a great opportunity to support so many people that otherwise would not have another form of family-safe entertainment that they can have access to. It's been a few years of partnership. I'm excited to continue that tradition and find ways to continue to support the programs that benefit so many. And as many things that we do, we tend to focus on what we can do to ensure the health and well-being of our communities. So on behalf of Comcast, I'm honored to be here to represent our employees, who are quite excited. Personally, I'm looking forward to attending with my family some of the events and hopefully get a chance to meet some of the new neighbors that I now have. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm intrigued. Where did you come from that you described surviving a Portland winter?
Well, Salt Lake City.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Point taken.
Like
thank you.
Quite a few places would, you know, make that comparison.
Well, thank you for being here today. Arlene.
Good morning, Commissioners. Mayor Hales. My name is Arlene Kimura, and I live in East Portland. And as part of the neighborhood system and East Portland Action Plan, I have been very, very happy to be involved in the whole Park Summer Free-for-All series. A couple of years ago, we decided we needed some playground activities for our children who don't have traditional park space. And the park staff worked with us. We work with us on funding. We work with us on hiring. And we have tremendous involvement from community members that finally realize that government officials in the city of Portland, at least, are really just like them. And so we've got our Summer Free-for-All East Portland version translated into 7 other languages besides English. And a lot of it was done with volunteers going door to door, handing them out. So we thank you very much, and we want to thank park staff for their help.
Thank you all for your partnership and for being here today.
Thank you.
I would be remiss in not saying thank you to Multnomah County, too.
Arlene was helpful in raising money from Multnomah County for expanding our mobile playground program, and really appreciate that. Our next speakers are Pamela Weatherspoon of Legacy Emmanuel Medical Center and Randall's Children's Hospital, and Nick Hardig, the Executive Director of Portland Parks Foundation. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. Wait for him to come up here. Thank you so much for allowing me to be here. I'm extremely passionate about parks. My name is Pamela Weatherspoon, and I'm responsible for community relations at Legacy Emmanuel and Randall Children's Hospital, and also get the pleasure of doing some work for Legacy Health as well. I have been very involved with the planning of the Dawson Park concert series for many years, ever since I started at Legacy Emmanuel about 4 years ago. The partnership with Legacy Health and Portland Parks in the Summer Free-for-All is extremely important for our organization. It's our mission to have good health for our people, our patients, our community, and the world. And this partnership really it really explains that, and it really shows that. We have also supported other parks other than just Dawson Park. When Legacy Emmanuel was building the new Randall Children's Hospital, we supported the Washington Park series and actually brought out one of our physicians to speak about the changes and the great work that was going to be happening at Randall Children's Hospital. We also brought out our kid team ambulance and allowed the kids to get to play in that ambulance. Through Good Samaritan Hospital, we've also supported the Wallace Park concerts for many years. And this last year, we also supported Harper's Playground by sponsoring the xylophone that is in that park. Over the years, like I stated, I have been on the committee to help plan Dawson Park concerts and really have seen those concerts really thrive and grow over the years. As many people might know, Dawson Park hasn't always been a safe place for our community, for our employees. And over the years, I really think the activation of the concerts in that park have really changed the image and the environment in that park. When I started, we only had 3 concerts that took place in that park, and over the years, we have grown that, and this last summer, we were able to add the addition of a movie. There's hundreds of people that come out to Dawson Park during the summer, and it's been just a joy for me to be able to see it grow and thrive throughout the year, the years that I have been involved. I think the summer free-for-all programming is extremely important for our community, and Legacy Emmanuel is committed to continue to support those programming, and I think it's a great thing for our community. And I have to also state that we also are supporting the revitalization of Dawson that's going to be taking place this fall, and I'm really excited to see how that's also going to help revitalize that park that is what we see to be our backyard of Legacy Emmanuel. And thank you so much again for allowing me to be here, and I hope that you will come out this summer. We have a great lineup in Dawson that will be starting on July 10th, and Legacy Emmanuel will be the title sponsor of the concert on the 17th with Curtis Delgado, so I'd love to see you at that one.
It's great to be here. I'm Nick Hartig with the Portland Parks Foundation. Mr. Mayor, commissioners, including 3 former parks commissioners, thanks a lot. And it's great to be here with Pamela and to recognize, as I start, their gift to Dawson's revitalization, a gift of $200,000, a really major investment in the community. As you all know very well, Portland did not become a great city by accident, and neither has the park system that in many ways defines that greatness. It takes a committed and informed public to keep our park system strong. Summer Free for All, its free recreation programs, its concerts, and its movies are really testament to that greatness. Their scope, their excellence, their reach into our communities, as well as how they are funded. Sponsorships from our generous business community, ably raised by the staff of Portland Parks and Recreation, and 47 neighborhood committees, individuals who have banded together to collect donations for free evenings where families can get together in a park, spread out a blanket, and enjoy a movie or a concert together on public land. Summer Free for All is a beautiful thing. It's testament to the vitality of this city and its citizens' love of parks. Portland Parks Foundation is pleased to support these efforts and to be a visible presence at nearly all of the 100 free-for-all events that are going to happen this summer, helping to collect donations and keep this proud tradition alive. But the Portland Parks Foundation always also thinks that we can do better for our parks. As Director Abate mentioned, 1 in 5 Portland families don't live within walking distance of a park or playground, and there is a parks funding shortfall that increases each year, creating a backlog of maintenance issues that undermines our park's legacy. These are tough economic times, tough budgetary times, but we feel that we can help Portland to do better. Take, for instance, the playgrounds that we do have. Half of our playgrounds are nearing the end of their useful lives and will need to be replaced in the next 10 years. That will require a considerable investment. Our park system is great, but vigilance is required to protect our common legacy. Portland Parks Foundation will be helping to raise funds for summer free-for-all events all summer long, but we will also be working to raise awareness of the challenges of our parks system and the communities that they serve. This October, we are also organizing the largest largest volunteer event in Portland Parks history. It will engage dozens of park supporting groups and hundreds of volunteers to embrace and volunteer for the parks that they love during 2 days of service. This volunteer effort is being called Parque Diem, and you'll hear more about it throughout the summer. We salute the council's and mayor's commitment during tough budget times to keep our park system whole, and we encourage you and all of Portland citizens to visit our tent when you see it and our banners at